This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Some people follow the rules, I break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we talk to the rebels who do things their way. Listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's sad for man.
B. Mitch Finley, 106.7 The Fan. It's high noon in the District of Columbia, and sometimes in life, you got to have uncomfortable conversations.
Let's have them.
Hello, Steve. How do you do?
I'm doing all right, JP. How are you guys doing?
We're good, man. We're joined on the Rude Guest Hotline by our friend, Mr. Steve Wino. You can give him a follow at S-Wino, W-H-Y-N-O. Wino covers the Caps, does an amazing job for the Associated Press, and it ain't running right lately, Wino.
Should we be concerned?
Yeah, B-Mitch, there should be some concern, and not panic necessarily, but this is a team that certainly, look, they're playing Ovechkin, they're playing get the puck to Ovechkin and get him the record for a month, and you have all that. But Alexei Protas is arguably their most important skater, Logan Thompson, their best goaltender. Both those guys have been out injured. Logan Thompson's back on the ice skating. We don't know when he'll be ready. Will he be ready for a game one Sunday or a week from today? We don't know. Alexei Protas had that skate cut. He's supposed to get back on the ice this week, but without those guys and sort of trying to flip a switch back from the Ovechkin chase and all that, it hasn't looked right. It's been disjointed, turnovers, mistakes, and it's not the hockey the Capitals want to be playing going into the playoffs.
All right, so that's all obvious. What if, and I know how hockey is with injuries, but if you could get LT or Protas back, do you think, I know Carberry's kind of hinted that they should be back for the playoffs. Is that where you see it happening? So we're talking like next weekend?
Yeah, I think there's a chance of that. I think there's a chance of whether, if it's not game one, it might be game two or game three of the series, because with these specific injuries, which we think is a concussion and a skate cut, there's no real, like, okay, they'll be back in 7 to 10 days or 2 to 4 weeks or whatever. So there's just an uncertainty of, A, being healthy enough to play, and also just conditioning, being on the ice enough practices and times. And I would predict the Capitals are going to practice, at least they have a full practice on Saturday to try to get these guys up to speed. And I think it's easier from one case to plug Alexei Protas in right away than it is to put a goaltender in there who's been ice cold and not play. But I think you almost look at this first round series, whether they play the Columbus Blue Jackets or the Montreal Canadiens for the Capitals, as game one might be ugly no matter what happens. So you sort of not throw it out, but you could get ready for that and figure you're in for a long series if you get those guys back healthy and shake the rust off.
Do you think they've been one of the better teams throughout the year, but they've gone after that record. Can they click that switch and bounce back?
That's the entire thing. And Brian, you know this as an athlete, that the psychology of trying to flip a switch is not easy. And it happens. This happens to a lot of teams. And this is why we talked about the President's Trophy sort of curse that people talk about in hockey. I don't think there's a curse on the trophy, which the Capitals now can't win, and I think that's a good thing for folks around here. But when you don't have adversity throughout a season and then you get punched in the face in the playoff series, it's do you have anything to pull from to respond to that? And that's the big question is, this team hasn't played meaningful hockey in so long. They've had such a cushion atop the Eastern Conference, and things have been going so well. You're talking about sort of the shooting percentages and the health up until now. For everything went so well for the first 65 games of an 82-game season that it was almost like the regression to what this team probably should be is like falling off a cliff in terms of the bounces, the luck, but even just things going right. Everyone having a career year sort of at the same time, from Alexei Protas, Pierre Dubois, great season, Dylan Strome, Tom Wilson, obviously Alex Ovechkin at 39 years old scoring 43 goals, that it was bound to sort of drop off. It's just a matter of can they sort of get back to what made them successful a few months ago in time before it's too late.
I don't want to go back to when they were the one seed and played Montreal for the eight, when they were the eight seed and lost in that first round, right? I don't want to go back to that. I think they're going to get their S together for the first round. I don't worry about that. But, like, when you look at the Vegas odds, it seems like a lot of knowledgeable hockey people don't now view the Caps as a cup threat. 2 months ago, everybody's like, oh, my God, this team is loaded. And now they're just kind of like, you know, just scuffling a bit. How do you feel about them with two? It's only they got two road games before the playoffs start. And they got, I mean, what was the total? Was it 11-1 in two games against Columbus over the weekend?
Yeah, not great. And look, the Capitals didn't really care about that game on Saturday. But still, you don't want to get pumped 7-0 in a game like that late in the season. But here's the thing, and we talked about this even a couple months ago when things were rolling well. The odds, the betting odds, never caught up to the Capitals being the contender or one of the top two or three contenders, because I think there were a lot of people in hockey, knowledgeable people, who saw that things were going so smoothly that it was almost unsustainable. And that the reason why the Stars and the Panthers and the Carolina Hurricanes and even the Toronto Maple Leafs are up there, Colorado Avalanche, as top contenders is you just looked at the body of work and say they can raise their level to a playoff when the playoffs start. And the Capitals' highest level, they may have reached already. And I think, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe they turn back into the team from before the Four Nations break, from a little bit out of that when they were sort of rolling along. But they've gotten sort of a lot of that puck luck throughout the season, that I'm not sure these next two games, to your point, matter whether they win or lose against the Islanders or the Penguins, but they need to get their process right. They need to get the way they play back on track. And you're not doing it with Alexi Protas, but you're doing it while maybe resting Alex Ovechkin again tomorrow and sort of trying to like get everybody's bodies healthy and ready while also like, everyone's minds aren't right now. Like there's just something off with this team that it's really hard to see how they just come out game one and blitz someone. But maybe with the talent on this roster, they're able to do that.
I hope they do.
So serious question here. Last year, we're talking with our friend Steve Wino, joining us on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude makes the most reliable HVAC products in the DMV. Give Steve a follow at SWino, Instagram and Twitter. Last year, it was Lindgren that really got them into the playoffs. He was so good down the stretch. They got swept. They were outclassed by the Rangers last year. But he got them in because he was so good. Then this year, they go get Logan Thompson in the offseason. He gets the extension. Charlie does too, but it's not as much money. When things were really going great for Washington, it was LT was a stud, and then when Lindgren did play, he was really good too. Mm-hmm. Lindgren hasn't been all that good of late.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm actually going to absolve him a little bit more. Like, not that he hasn't made that spectacular save that he was making this time last year to get them in, but it's been a mess in front of these guys. Like, even look at Logan Thompson's numbers in the final month before he got hurt, and just you can tell a lot of the chances the Capitals are giving up that the good thing really about the way they played for the first 3 or 4 months of the season was they weren't relying on their goaltenders. Like Logan Thompson's numbers are really good, but it wasn't like you watched him and was like, this guy's one of the best goalies in the league. His numbers made it look like it because the team in front of him was playing so well. And he and Charlie Lindgren were making the saves that were needed in those situations. They weren't being asked to sort of be the reason the Capitals were winning games. And now when you've got Rasmus Sandin just passes the puck to a Blue Jackets player last night, unassisted goal. What is Charlie Lindgren supposed to do about that? Odd man rushes the other day against the Islanders, or the day Alex Ovechkin broke the record. I don't know what a goaltender is supposed to do when he's facing a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2 every couple of minutes. Not to say that the goaltending can't be better. I think everything about the Capitals game right now can be better, and it's something that's going to be their focus in the next two games and the practices of next weekend. But I don't think they're the problem. I think there's a lot of missing in the structure and the defensive sort of coverage that made this team so good and so tough because they were able to defend so well that then they could use that to spark offense and go the other way and score. And they're not doing either of those things right now.
It really is crazy because they were – I mean, I think they still have scored the most goals in the NHL. I know they did for a while before they kind of hit this lull. Do you think the Ovi record chase did – I don't want to say damage because it's incredible and he deserves that record, but, like, the timing of it coming late into the year as they get to the playoffs, just it's going to be harder than they thought to kind of get back to the normal offense they were running.
Yeah, and short answer, yes. Long answer, but it's good that Alex Ovechkin got it done when he did, because if we were still talking about that now, and then they've got to celebrate and sort of go into the flip the switch mode in the playoffs, I think it'd be even harder. Alex Ovechkin gave this team a major break by doing it in game, whatever, 77 of the season and not game 81 or 82, because they do have this time to reset. And honestly, Spencer Carberry, light into them and maybe bag skate them Saturday, whatever it is, to sort of get their minds right. And maybe time kind of heals that sort of weird adjustment back. And I said this to Trevor Van Riemsdyk the other day, like, usually when you win a big championship and celebrate, you have a whole summer to reset. And this team really did celebrate like a championship and deservedly so. They absolutely should have and did. But at least they have the time now to figure it out. And we may look back if they lose in the first round, if they lose in the second round, that the chase sort of became the season. But I also wonder 10, 15 years from now, I know it's hard to think about this like now, but we're all going to remember the chase more than we're going to remember that sort of even a playoff exit. And then obviously this team would love to go make another run, go to a final, win the Stanley Cup and all those things. But if nothing else, this is a season that everyone's going to remember for Alex Ovechkin breaking the record and the chase leading up to that.
100%.
I agree. Almost unless they win a cup.
They win a cup.
That only adds to it, right?
They will still remember the chase if they win a cup.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so looking ahead, the two games this week, you'd like to see them just look back to what they can be, but they don't really matter. It's not definite that they're playing the Canadiens, but it sure looks that way. What is the deal with Montreal and Columbus trying to get in, and who do you like to get that eight spot?
Well, let's make this easy. If the Canadiens win either one of their final two games, they play the last place lowly Blackhawks tonight. If they win, they're in. It's the Canadiens. That's it. Blue Jackets need to win out and for the Canadiens to lose out to get in. So I think by the odds right now, it's 95% chance. It's going to be the Montreal Canadiens and 5% the Blue Jackets.
But okay.
Both of these teams, young, hungry sort of teams that exceeded expectations to get in. Montreal's best player is Lane Hudson, is going to be the Rookie of the Year. He's actually an older brother of the Caps, now top prospect, not on the team, Cole Hudson. And look, the Capitals will be favored in that series against either one of these teams. They should beat either one of these teams. I understand maybe the fan base getting nervous about the 2010 stuff, whatever. That doesn't matter. That team is entirely different than this one. The Bell Center is a tough place to play. Would be kind of the bigger concern there. But the Capitals should be able to take care of both of those teams, in theory, setting up a second-round matchup against the Carolina Hurricanes or the New Jersey Devils.
Am I wrong to be freaked out about a second-round matchup with the Hurricanes?
No, you shouldn't be freaked out. But I think that if I'm picking a Stanley Cup champion or Stanley a finalist from the East right now, I think it's Carolina. I think there's just something about that team and the way Rob Brindamore has them playing. But the Capitals have had good and bad games against them. The game in Carolina was during sort of the OB chase. Come back here, the Hurricanes blow a 2-goal lead. The Capitals blow a 2-goal lead. And it goes to a shootout. It's pretty even. I consider it a pretty even series that the Capitals, if they get Logan Thompson back, if they get Alexi Protas back, and you get the sort of right bounces and luck and whatever going, and they get their game back together, if they need a series to get their game back together and survive the first round, I think it's a long one. I think it's a 6-7 game, coin flip. Somebody gets a goal overtime or late in regulation. I think there's a right to be concerned about it. But really, to as cliche as it is, one series at a time. I wouldn't even worry about Carolina until the Capitals can get past the Canadiens or the Blue Jackets.
Yep. Pump our brakes a little bit, Jay.
Yeah, I suppose you're right, Wano. Is every is Is the conversation in there surrounding Ovi kind of done now? Like, is not everybody asking Ovi about everything all the time?
Yeah, I think now I think he's tired of that, and I think the team is ready to move on. And you could sort of sense that the first practice after, I mean, he had 895 school children there, and Ovechkin does the belly flop, and like it was sort of like that, and the pregame celebration the other night was like, let's put a capper on this. It's like when the team wins a championship and you have the ring ceremony or go to the White House or whatever. Like they need to put that behind them now. And Alex Ovechkin is still scoring goals. I think he has scored roughly 30% of their goals since February 1st or whatever it is. And it's good that he's scoring. The Capitals just need to, at this point, figure out how to get back to playing hockey and not worrying about who's scoring the goals, just that they are. Because I just looked up the stat. They're no longer the highest scoring team in the NHL because of this stretch. And they've allowed three or more goals in 11 games in a row. That's a troubling thing that you don't want to have happen. And I think it's something that if you're Spencer Carberry and the coaching staff, is going to be an emphasis at the Islanders, at the Penguins, no matter who's playing or who's resting in those games, that they need to lock down defensively. And even if it means losing a 2-1 game, because these games don't matter, to get that sort of defensive game right in time for playing Montreal or Columbus next weekend.
Yeah, man, you got to – defense wins championships. All right, last thing for me, Wino. B, I don't know if you have something. Talking with our friend Steve Wino, covers the Caps for the AP. Give him a follow, at S Wino. I had to be down there yesterday at the arena to do the Wizards Altcast, which was a 1 o'clock tip. When I pulled in to the parking lot, there was I'll never forget this car. It was like a lime green, very, very bright green Dodge Charger with a huge, and I mean huge, Columbus Blue Jackets flag sticking out, like mounted to the car. Have you ever seen this person before? Is this the world's largest Blue Jackets fan? It seemed incredible.
He was here?
This was here. So the Caps played the Blue Jackets at 6 o'clock at Cap 1. This was at like noon.
I have no idea. I've never seen that car before. But I guess if they play the Blue Jackets in the playoffs, we're going to have to do some investigating on that.
Yeah, dude. I'm telling you, if they play the Blue Jackets in the playoffs, we will absolutely see this car again. If anybody else saw it, please let me know, because otherwise I sound pretty crazy right now.
We'll get to the bottom of some things if they play the Blue Jackets in the playoffs.
Dude, what do you think? Now, this is a guess, but Lord knows we're going to do some mock scheduling for the NFL. What is the Steve Wino mock Caps playoff schedule look like?
We have been hearing rumors of a Monday, a week from tonight, game one start of that series. We know that the Capitals are not going to be made to play Saturday because they play Thursday. You're not going to make the best team in the East turn around on that. And so there's a possibility that they start Sunday the 20th. But leaning toward a Monday, April 21st start, which will make game two, Wednesday the 23rd at home as well. And game three on night two of the draft, game on Friday, the 25th at Montreal, and then at Sunday, the 27th at Montreal for game four. That is my best guess at this moment in time.
And did you, I don't know if you told me this or somebody told me this in Long Island, that generally the Canadian teams don't get prime time, like generally that Saturday, Sunday, 3 o'clock ABC Turner national game usually doesn't go to Canadian teams in the first round?
That's true, because it just like sort of with how the NFL works is there's a sort of a collaboration between the league, ESPN, Turner, Sportsnet, and the French broadcaster TVA of sort of splitting the games up among those networks and who gets what and what's the best time on that. I'm a little surprised it wouldn't be a hockey night in Canada sort of Saturday night, but if it's Leafs and Senators and the Oilers and the Kings in the West and Winnipeg against whoever, there's plenty of other options for that, which would allow the Capitals and Canadians to do a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, and then I guess a Tuesday back here bit in the first round.
So Leafs Senators seems almost locked in, right?
It's close. Right? It can lock in as close as soon as tomorrow, as long as the Leafs get a point and Panthers win tonight. Against the Rangers. I think you can lock that in. You can lock in Lightning, Panthers. We've known about Carolina and Jersey for a while, and Capitals are just waiting to see Canadians or Blue Jackets.
That's wild. So it's going to be the battle. What is that? Battle of Ontario, Toronto versus Ottawa,
and then the Sunshine State showdown between Tampa and Florida again.
That's crazy. And then Raleigh versus Newark. It doesn't have quite the same.
That sounds like our friend Ben Raby used to call that the Golf Channel series when they have to move move some games to the Golf Channel. That's the Golf Channel series.
That's funny. All right, Wino, thank you, buddy. We'll be watching, we'll be reading, we'll be paying attention, and probably see you for the playoffs.
Thanks, guys. Stop worrying so much, and talk to you soon.
All right, thank you. I'm gonna try to stop worrying so much. You know one thing I do not worry about? My garage door. I can't tell you how many times I've pulled out of my driveway and thought, wait, did I leave the garage door open? But because I got this dope app, the MyQ app, and a LiftMaster garage door, there's no stress. I can just check it on the app. I can close it on the app. There's a camera on the app. You can do whatever you want. You can get alerts if the door's open. You can get alerts if it's been open too long. All right on your phone. The MyQ technology is super, super dope. Like if we need somebody to be able to get into the house, I can let somebody into the house right here, Landfill, sitting in the prison cell studio. That is service. The folks at Door Pro America set me up, man. These guys are experts. They helped us narrow down the options and provided an awesome recommendation based on our house that looks better. Probably increased our curb appeal, probably increased the damn value of my home, honestly. The whole process couldn't have been easier. Based locally, Door Pro America has been proudly serving the DMV for over 50 years. They can do it all. Maybe you just need a little bit of maintenance or a repair. They can do that. Or they can do the new installations like my house because they are seasoned pros. Call today and ask how you can save $60 on a repair or $150 on a new garage door. Call 877-DOOR-PRO. That's 877-DOOR-PRO. Tell them J.P. Finley sent you. Or you can check them out now at doorproamerica.com. B. Mitch Finley, 106.7 The Fam. Shout out to the stream, all the folks on YouTube watching us right now. See Captain Todd, Uptown Dre. Uptown Dre's fired up for the WNBA draft tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Sticks got the third, the fourth, and the sixth picks.
Yeah, you get your whole team with that.
That's a lot, right? let's hope it works out well for the Mystics. We'll have somebody tomorrow to recap.
That many first-round picks, that high. Damn.
I don't know. I did want to get to some NFL stuff here, though. Brian.
Yo.
Remember months back, maybe weeks back, we heard that, like, and I feel like we kind of heard about this, like, a year ago, but there was some talk of, like, ESPN buying NFL Network or merging or acquiring. Mm-hmm. Remember that conversation?
Yes. Happening now?
Well,
not happening.
I don't know, but I know that Peter Schrager just went from NFL Network to ESPN in a very, like, it seemed like a very positive, everybody was like, oh, congrats. Like, there was no animus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Rap Sheet just tweeted this out. The ESPN NFL Network crossover event this week in advance of the NFL draft, where Mel Kiper is going to be on NFL Network. Daniel Jeremiah is going to be on ESPN. Just kind of curious. Maybe they've done this before. I don't know, but it.
I don't remember it.
Me either.
So.
Seems kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's about. I don't. That's a. Whatever the play is there is like a money thing. The only real area I would question is. These, like, really high up, like, Rappaport and Schefter, I don't know what their relationship is. I don't want to speak to it. That's a very competitive situation.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
And I think everybody else can kind of coexist, whatever. But I would find pretty interesting.
It would probably still have that competitiveness. But you don't want to – normally when you're competing against somebody, all of a sudden now you're on the same team. What happens?
Well, and I think at ESPN.
And do they lean to one guy or the other?
At ESPN, you know the hierarchy, right? Like Schefter's at the top, and then you got Graziano and Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
Diana used to be there. She does her own thing now. And then you have all the people that cover specific teams.
Yeah.
John Keim in our town. But like. If they end up over there, they're not bound. There's no hierarchy that we've agreed to.
No.
There's no structure.
You don't know that.
Yeah. And maybe big old paycheck could always have an impact, too. All right, a couple of things to discuss. Virginia safety Jonas Sanker has had a visit with Washington.
All right.
I believe Sanker is probably.
He mentioned him the other day. Somebody mentioned him.
We
had somebody on that was talking about him.
One of the draft guys we had on?
Yeah, but it was somebody locally that we knew.
Standing, maybe?
Might have been.
Well, I know he and I both had a mock with the East Carolina corner. This dude's a straight-up safety. I think you're talking a third or fourth rounder for Sanker. So something interesting to watch, certainly. But Washington's also bringing in two corners today.
Mm-hmm.
Today, maybe this week. What will you think be if the investments are into the secondary and not the D-line? Say it's Thursday and Friday picks.
Well, one helps the other. If the secondary has better coverage, they give the D-lineman more time to get to it. That may be their way of thinking. You know, we got to remember the Legion of Boom, Dan Quinn in Seattle, his secondary was outstanding. That could be a way of doing it. Or they may have enough confidence in some of the people that they have here now. Because I don't feel like you just say, oh, but we got in the secondary now. We go with it.
I think ideally you get somebody in there. You know what I mean? I still think you need edge, but I think because you pick so late, it's got to just be best player available.
Yeah.
And the only positions you're not going are tight end and quarterback. Everything else is on the table to me. And that includes wide receivers, honestly. I think, you know, there's – so I did my, like, full five-round mock draft for Beltway football. I told you about my late-round draft crush.
Who is that?
It's dude Dante Thornton Jr.,
from where?
He started Oregon and played, I think, the last 2 years at Tennessee. You know why I like Mr. Thornton, Brian?
Why?
4.3.
40?
Yeah.
What position? Your corner?
Receiver. Wide out.
All right.
Averaged 25 yards a catch for the Volunteers.
Okay.
It's a big play. Speed. Speed kills. And how many... Yo, he runs a 4.3 and he's 6.5.
Oh, damn.
That's just...
And you're thinking about getting him in what round?
Fifth.
Will he stay that long? Will he be there that long?
They currently don't have a fifth, so I guess my hope is they get him at 205 in the sixth. You know, trying to project that stuff, it's hard to project the top 10, let alone what's going to happen in the sixth round.
Yeah.
Zuerlein from NFL.com has him as a fourth round projection. I mean, dude, he's just
6'5 and 4'3. Somebody will talk themselves into picking him higher. Oregon and Tennessee.
Yeah.
Not like he's coming from a small school. You know, not like he's coming from a small school, but to pick him up and put him down like that and be that tall.
This is a little random though. 6'5. And his arms are 32 and an eighth inch. Isn't that kind of short for 6'5"? Doesn't that seem a little not proportional?
Yeah.
Right? Because most of these tackles are 6'5", but their arms are 33 and a half or whatever.
Yeah.
What's your hand size?
Me? 10 and a foot.
10 and a quarter?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I fear these hands sound kind of small.
What are your hands?
9 5/8.
Nah, that's big.
Okay. His athleticism.
He built like Jeff. Big, tall guy with short arms and little hands.
Jeff out here looking like a T-Rex. this kid, 4'3", 40, 1.51 10-yard split.
That's running, dog.
Yo, his vertical's 33 inches. The broad's 10'6".
A tall dude like that, to be able to get moved that quick, he's not going to be there late in the fourth round or fifth round, Jeff.
I know one thing about my guy, Jeff. He's got a type. Jeff likes them tall receivers.
He likes them tall, and you'll predict them to have five touchdowns.
Now, I got to point out the weaknesses on this dude. He's not a I don't think anybody's going to call him a polished route runner. It's called a nine route, coach. But right. he can run some, like, deep crossers for you, too. But it's not – he's going to have to work on the tree.
He's a red zone guy.
Zuerlein writes, the value can be snuffed out by deep safety looks. The long strides are gradual and rounded on in-breaking routes. I hate when receivers round off the top of the route. That's why you never get across the safety's face. And a lot of times you're either going to get smacked or,
I square that thing,
or the quarterback's not going to go to you. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Get that outside foot in the ground, drop the hips, get straight across, brother.
I feel like he's, because he has that speed, there's not always a ton of burst, if that makes sense. But you get him running straight, ain't nobody catching him.
Got that right.
It's, I don't know, it's going to be fun to watch the draft. It's so great and different. Like when we walked in this morning and you had Orlovsky yelling about the Steelers. And if the Steelers, what they're going to do, blah, blah, blah.
With quarterback.
And now there's all this talk. Did you see Deion tweeting about New Orleans?
Mm.
So now there's all this talk that the Saints are going to draft Shador,
Shador?
Okay. At nine.
All right.
But now maybe the Steelers want him.
Hey, man.
I think it's all just a bunch of nothing.
Well, I just think if Deion's involved, it's a bunch of something.
Deion tweeted about New Orleans. So,
I'm a Buffalo fan. I need him to be tweeting about Colorado.
I got to be honest. This is incredibly bizarre. I just went to Deion's X account.
Uh-huh.
He follows me.
Really?
Yeah. That's cool. Thanks, coach.
Mm.
So, Deion tweeted... I have to remind myself of.
What?
I'm a huge believer in the draft process that you do not, you got to ignore everything that happens between January 1st and late April. Like what you saw on the field is what should be your guiding principle with the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. And what we saw from Shador was always very good.
Yeah.
He was always good, dude.
Yeah. But people start those rumors too. To try to get people to – it happens.
Totally.
Lion season, as I call it. I call it.
Barry Svrluga joins the program at 1 o'clock. Now, folks, all weekend it was cold, and today it's perfect. D.C. weather is crazy, but we know summer is coming. Now is the perfect time to schedule a $99 cooling and heating check with the five-star experts at Crop Metcalf. For just $99, a Crop Metcalf five-star tech will check both your home's cooling and heating systems for one low price, under $100, man. There's a ton of benefits to a Crop Metcalf maintenance check, including increasing the efficiency of your system, lowering those energy bills, spotting small problems before they turn into big ones. It'll cost you a lot more cash. You're always better off being proactive with this stuff. Don't wait. Call today and get peace of mind no matter what the crazy DMV weather does tomorrow. Do what I always do. Call 1-800-GO-CROP or visit cropmetcalf.com. Crop Metcalf is the home of the five-star technician. Shout out to our friend Denton Day. B and I had a lot of fun Friday night at his wedding in Leesburg.
Yep.
You know what was cool was Ben Hartsock was cool.
Yeah, he was.
Ben knows Denton through their work at XM together. And we all sat together, and Hartsock was telling some cool stories. It was crazy. So Hartsock was drafted by the Colts, so he played with Peyton Manning, obviously.
Peyton Manning and Tom Brady.
Huh? Yeah, he had a cup of coffee with Tom Brady late in his career. But he ended up in Carolina during Ron Rivera's first season there. And it was interesting. We asked him, you know, what was Ron like? He was like, you know, he was a first-time head coach, and I think he was still figuring a lot of stuff out. And he said, you know, he tried to be different things to different people, like, if somebody needed a hard ass, he'd be a hard ass. If somebody needed like a shoulder to talk to, he could be that. I was like, man, that's the same type of dude I saw here. And then you explained how different everything was when he was your position coach. Or right.
A position coach in Philly. But I think he didn't have to run things. So he was more of who he is. The guy that we all saw that played in Chicago in 85.
You had to be a badass to be a linebacker on the 85 Bears. That's just how that works.
You know, he gave much of a, like what Ben was saying, I took that as politician, and we saw that a lot.
Yeah. So. Can't be everything for everyone. At some point, you just got to be what you are. The other story that Hartsock told, which was just incredible, to think about the names involved. So, Ben Hartsock was drafted in 2004, third rounder by the Colts. I think he went a little bit ahead of Chris Cooley.
Yeah.
had a 10-year NFL career. I mean, accomplished fella.
10 years, a lot of time.
He
bro.
Told us, he's like, 10 years, one touchdown. He's yeah. like, nobody else has ever accomplished that.
That much time and that little production.
But he played his college football at Ohio State. And Ohio State Miami national championship game is one of the most memorable, I think, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about it. I don't know how Maurice Claret came up. Remember, we were talking about Claret.
Yeah, they were talking about, like, certain people getting in trouble and stuff of that
yeah.
nature.
Well, obviously, Claret's story is sad. But apparently, he's turned it around, turned his life around now, which is mm-hmm. great. But in that game, I think one of the most remarkable football plays I've ever seen was the Ohio State quarterback throws an interception. He's running up the field.
Sean Taylor.
It was Sean Taylor with the interception.
Mm-hmm.
And then Claret runs up there and takes the ball from him.
Yep.
So it was a interception and then a fumble. Hartsock was like, yeah, man, that pass was for me. He's like, that was going to be my national championship touchdown. And Sean Taylor came out of nowhere and picked it off.
I'll take that.
I just thought it was neat. It was that was a fun wedding. I enjoyed it. All right, here we go. David Walker, edge rusher from Central Arkansas, who's really done well pre-draft, going to be visiting the Commanders tomorrow.
All right.
What do we need to know about David Walker?
Give it to us.
I think you're going to like this, B. We know they like athletic guys, right?
Totally.
Now, I think Walker's a... probably a Saturday pick, but Dave Walker, 6'1", 31 7/8 inch arms, 263, 9 1/4 inch hands, big fella, 6'1", 260, 4'6", 940, and perhaps more.
Pass rusher?
Yeah.
Okay.
More importantly for a pass rusher, 165, 10 yard.
All right.
I like that.
Gets off. Yep.
35-inch vertical. The three cone's pretty good. The strength's pretty good. 26 reps at 225. I think there's a reason he's had a good pre-draft because he can move.
Mm-hmm.
Southern Arkansas is not a school I have a tremendous amount of information on. I will say that up front. But you're seeing more and more of FCS guys get drafted high. And just that Washington's using their 30s on not just first-round guys, I think, is really smart and indicative of a team.
Teams that do that, are you only going to have first-rounders on your team?
Right.
You need to talk to other people, too, get to know them, right?
I get it if you have the 6th pick or the 5th pick. And there's probably, and you say you have the 5th pick and you don't need a quarterback, there's probably 10 dudes on your board that you could go for. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you got to get that pick right. But at 29, you got to
talk to everybody.
Yeah, dude, you got to talk to everybody, which obviously they're doing. That news is going to keep coming in, dude. We're only 10 days away from the draft. It's going to be mm-hmm. a blast. They actually sent out the draft schedule for the media. This gets people steamed up. Next Tuesday, right? April 22nd is next Tuesday. Adam Peters and Lance Newmark are going to do the pre-draft presser.
Okay.
Let me tell you something. That's 3 o'clock next Tuesday. Be on a scale of 1 to 10. How much information do you think we will gain from that press conference?
2.1.
Hell, that's higher than I would have thought. I think 1.1.
They're going to give you the time and what they're going to be doing. They're going to tell you their picks. That's the information. They'll tell you what they're looking for. It won't be a position. It'll be like the character of the player,
tough,
what they're
strong,
looking for, and that type of thing. Yeah, yeah. The adjective that they describe them with. And then you'll find out that they're looking forward to the draft.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Landfill, do you think Adam Peters giving a pre-draft press conference is compulsory or optional?
Oh, I think it's a requirement.
Yeah. This joint is a league requirement.
And 100%.
You know why? Because the league wants to generate interest in its television show of the NFL draft. That's how the world works. But whatever, we get to talk to AP. It'll be good. When we come back, we get to talk to Barry Svrluga, who might still be in Augusta. Nobody go anywhere.